walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today is Gabriella Kalperthwaite, director of Blackfish, the new documentary examining the perils of keeping orcas in captivity. While the film focuses on the SeaWorld operation and an infamous killer whale named Tilikum, who was responsible for the death of three people, including SeaWorld Orlando head trainer Don Branchell. Blackfish has drawn rave reviews in recent days from film critics and harsh attacks from SeaWorld. I discuss all that in the interview with Kalperthwaite, which we'll hear presently. Also, later in the show, we'll have a brief chat with Nancy McCall, Director of Development for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, about an exciting program they're participating in called Primp Your Pit, which allows folks in Hillsborough County to get their pit bulls spayed or neutered for a deeply discounted price. Right now, though, let's discuss orcas, SeaWorld, Tilikum, and more. In an interview recorded yesterday, this is Gabriella Kalperthwaite on Talking Animals. Okay, let's welcome to Talking Animals, Gabriella Kalperthwaite. Thanks for joining us today, Gabriella.
Thank you for having me.
So, congratulations on making an extraordinary film and sort of powerful in its impact, and already it appears pretty eye-opening for many, many people. I want to address the impact and SeaWorld's 11th-hour response and other aspects of Blackfish in a moment, but I'd kind of like to start with an aspect of the film that really struck me, kind of surprised me, really, as someone who's actually pretty steeped in this issue and has done a bunch of shows about SeaWorld and Tilikum and captive orcas. And by that, I'm referring to the sort of profound sadness pouring out of several people being interviewed on screen, most commonly the former SeaWorld trainers, many of whom are traumatized, obviously, by realizing actually how deeply Tilikum was traumatized, but also like comments by that John Crow, I assume it's how it's pronounced, who helped capture the orcas for SeaWorld in Puget Sound some 40 years ago, and just clearly is just haunted by those experiences. Can you talk a little bit about the sadness and what that meant to you as you started to see it maybe repeatedly while you were fashioning the film?
Yeah. It was absolutely a very sort of powerful theme that runs through sort of all the interviews. And, you know, the way I came to understand it was that, especially in terms of the former SeaWorld trainers, they left SeaWorld and, you know, have been away from there for some just a year, but some many years. And in each of these cases, they all felt just compelled, almost driven to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because they need to speak for the animals they feel they left behind. So, you know, it's very difficult once you're in that park. You know, you develop these tremendous bonds with these animals, and you know, you're afraid oftentimes to leave your job and to quit or to be fired because you're never sure if anybody will ever take care of your animal as good as you did. And, you know, and in that way, some of the trainers speak of kind of people being able to use love as leverage.
Yeah.
Right. Because then, you know, they can actually say, well, if you're an upstart or if you challenge authority, we'll take you off working with your whale and put you in sea lion and otter, you know, essentially maybe demote you.
Right.
Way.
Right.
Or fire you and, you know, you'll never see your whale again. So that was completely shocking to me.
Yeah.
I had never even imagined that. It is. Very palpable, their sadness, and I think doing the film was in some ways giving them closure.
Right, and also just as even as these have addressed here, I mean it's just clear over and over, and your film really just highlights this unfortunately in so many ways, is how dysfunctional, which again, pretty trendy word and overused, but how dysfunctional both SeaWorld itself is as a entity, but as you've just described, how some of the relationship with their trainers and perhaps others is itself dysfunctional, and how that was used to great effect.
That's right. That's right. Now, there is a level of very strong, I think, dysfunction. I think that, you know, look, I mean, it's about a $2.7 billion a year industry.
Yeah.
You know, in their minds, this business model continues to work. And it's something that, you know, that has begun sort of sustaining itself, right? Like, I mean,
sure.
There's really nobody that can challenge them. There's nobody that can, you know, they can take all the information that they've all known that I sort of exposed in the film. They've been able to take that information and just shove it under the rug for 40 years.
Right. Well,
they were even able to do that with a trainer death, just sort of cast it aside, trainer error. This was, you know, a terrible accident, but we've moved past it, and now we know how to fix the problem.
Yeah.
So we're
going
to move on. I mean, they have a history of being able to push the business model forward. And to not change.
Right. Well, as they've proven, you know, animal-oriented sort of corporate malfeasance is incredibly lucrative for them. If it ain't broke, they're not about to fix it, especially, like you say, to the tune of, you know, $2+ billion a year. So,
exactly.
So with that in mind, though, one of the things that I think makes Blackfish so powerful and effective is that you really came to it not as an animal activist, but as a filmmaker and a mother. Can you describe a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't come from animal activism. I, you know, thought that that SeaWorld actually did. I always thought that SeaWorld was a, you know, even a happy place. Let me just say that again. I always thought that SeaWorld was a happy place, and that if I actually had to be an animal in captivity, I would probably choose to be a killer whale. At Shamu Stadium. Why did I think that? I kind of look back and revisit what it was that I was seeing when I was there. I certainly had a cringe factor when I watched these shows with my kids and thought, you know, that seemed kind of undignified and sad and, geez, you know, that's a really goofy trick.
Yeah.
But then I would think, I would sense the love that the trainers have of the whales and think that's sort of palpable. And, you know, they're getting hugged and they're seem to be getting reinforced for, you know, with these huge buckets of fish, and that must make them happy. They must get along and have their own little families in there. And so, you know, I did not know what kind of laid beneath. In fact, I backed into the whole whale issue. I was coming at this as a documentary filmmaker looking at the trainer deaths, and only slowly started sort of peeling back the onion on what it was that's not just happening to Tillicum.
Yeah,
but to all the whales. So I've just, you know, it took me 2 years to, you know, to expose this film and to work on this film, and I'm giving the audience 80 minutes, you know,
yeah,
which is kind of unfair. That's why it feels so, I think, shocking.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't think this was the film I was going to make, and until I learned the truth. Wasn't sure really what film I was going to make, but the moment, I mean, I guess I put it this way, when you see it, you can't unsee it.
Right.
You once you learn what it is that goes on there, you you know, feel compelled to tell everybody.
And so this sounds like kind of a series of surprises, really, because it sounds like, as you say, you sort of backed into it just looking at the trainer thing and then saw, holy cow, there's much, much bigger picture here, literally. So if you had to pick one, what would be the most surprising thing that you learned when you were on this path?
Wow. I think learning that the whales don't get along and oftentimes vie for dominance. You know, learning that the whales vie for dominance constantly, and that this theme of conflict is something that they can't escape. Now, you know, in the wild, of course, they vie for dominance. There, you know, are interactions that they have with each other that are somewhat aggressive or, you know, injurious to one another.
Yeah.
But number one, it's important to note that they don't seriously injure one another, and there's no documentation of a whale killing another whale in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to know that there have been there is a case of a whale killing another whale in captivity, and that they're constantly injuring each other, that was a tragic and disheartening thing to learn for me.
Yeah.
Again, you know, also in the wild, they can flee.
Right.
Right, if they're kind of encountering conflict.
Sure.
The subdominant animal can say touche and swim away. In a place like SeaWorld, they can't ever escape that undercurrent of conflict.
Yeah.
And again, that seems so sad. That seems like a very sad existence to me.
And really, what it does, because it sort of, for the moment at least, leaves the trainer, the injuries and unfortunate killings to trainers aside for a moment, and just underscores the incredible sort of psychological trauma that they endure, not just being in kind of the swimming pool or the concrete pens and all the stuff you hear about, which, again, are totally true, but also the sort of arbitrary, and you get into this in the film as well, sort of mixing and matching of whales.
Yes.
Where they have incredible family connections otherwise, and it's not just, hey, a menu, like, hey, item A and item B together, that's going to be a cool pairing of orcas. And
I think that's right. And that's, I guess, I always just hope in some way, shape, or form that there was, they had, like, a strong family there. Like, they were in these little family units, and okay, sure, it's in captivity, and overall, that's terrible that they can't swim and can't kind of escape these confines. And yet, at least they're with each other. And at least they have their babies with them and their mothers with them and you know, that.
Yeah.
That's what I hoped, I guess.
Yeah.
And learning that, you know, number one, calves are often stripped from mothers.
Yeah.
And frequently stripped from mothers because, you know, another SeaWorld will need a new baby Shamu. And, you know, that is tragic. But then to learn that even when they are together, that they don't necessarily even speak the same languages. You know, that they are just kind of a bunch of strangers.
Yeah.
Forced together in these environments. And you can't force a pod. You know, you can't
right.
just kind of artificially create one.
Right.
You either have one or you don't. So anyway, yeah, you just, you know, you get almost exhausted.
Right.
When you start learning that there's nothing, you know, there doesn't seem to be anything redeemable about their existence in these parks. I'd say the only redeemable part is that the trainers love them and that the trainers care for them and would do sort of anything for these whales.
Yeah.
That was important for me to learn that, you know, that at least they have somewhat, you know, someone trying to speak on their behalf.
For sure. Yeah, that's the at times they're only advocates, and even that, as we already touched on, only with limited effectiveness, unfortunately, sometimes. So this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Gabriela Cowperthwaite, director of Blackfish, the new documentary about the perils of keeping orcas in captivity, SeaWorld, and an infamous killer whale named Tilikum. This was a conversation recorded yesterday. Gabriela, I mean, one of the things we're sort of talking about is, yeah, there's nothing redeemable here, and one of the things that's kind of my favorite aspect of doing this show is having a front row seat and hearing major tales of redemption when they do crop up, and for example, a film that's often been cited now in the same breath as Blackfish is The Cove, and at the center of that movie is Rick O'Berry, who went from flipper trainer and dolphin exploiter kind of extraordinaire to the world's kind of foremost dolphin advocate and protector, and there are plenty more examples of that in the animal world. In Blackfish, you interview a number of people who seem to be experiencing tales of redemption to varying degrees. Maybe you could discuss a little bit of that sense of those folks whose interviews appear on screen, and again, it sounds like from what you said before, there's a lot of stuff that isn't in the film or isn't on screen, but it sounds like, I mean, those were sort of important parts of telling the Blackfish story as it unfolds.
Right, right. And so, when you were thinking primarily about...
Well, just some of the trainers who left for one reason or another, some more recently than others, but it seems like some of what their stories, and again, how we've already talked about just how emotionally affected they've been from their experience, that in one way or another, they're sort of experiencing their own tales of redemption, just even by participating in the film or otherwise speaking out, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is a a powerful theme. I think, you know, again, I sort of feel one really powerful theme that I got from, I think, all the trainers was that, yes, that they, you know, essentially needed to speak on behalf of the whales because they had really felt that they had left the whales behind in a previous life.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking on behalf of the whales in the film is a way of kind of giving the whales a voice and finding kind of their own closure.
Sure.
And yes, I think that in my mind, because you talk about redemption, when I was actually kind of writing the script for the film and realizing I wanted it to be this fact-driven story based on, you know, Tillicum's capture and then kind of following this narrative track of his life all the way through to the end,
yeah.
I also wanted the parallel story of what I essentially call my apostles, the former trainers,
yeah,
who were delivering the message, you know, from the other side.
For
and
sure.
then, you know, I wanted to watch their trajectory, starting as people who loved the park, and then follow them to their disillusionment, and then, you know, show them at the end, in, yes, in kind of a redemptive way, watching the wild whales, watching whales in the wild, you know, in Penn Cove.
Yeah.
So, to me, it was a clear trajectory, because it really is their trajectory. I mean, they go to go see wild the former trainers in the film go to visit the wild whales.
And right.
You know, they go to Penn Cove every year to see wild whales. So yeah, I just felt that just felt like the right ending.
For sure. For sure. Since their story is pivotal, but as you say, and as anyone who's seen the film knows, Tillicum's story is he is in effect the star of your film. What I mean, you deliver sort of a really rich, textured portrait of him. I mean, it's a complicated story, and he's a complicated animal, and orcas are just inherently complicated and complex. What at this point, what's your sort of personal take on Tillicum?
Oh, it's amazing. I actually have to confess that I started out being terrified of him.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came at this story, I obviously came at it through the portal of the John Rancho incident.
Yeah.
And so I had to read the autopsy report and to hear kind of the witness testimonies, and it was just so tragic. And he terrified me. He's a 12,000-pound apex predator.
Yeah.
And it scared me. He scared me. So, you know, I had to go back 40 years and essentially do a psychological profile on him.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because I wanted that to be the spine of the film, but because I myself needed to understand this animal and needed to understand how this graceful, majestic animal that doesn't do things like this in the wild, that doesn't kill people in the wild, could have come to this moment and could have been driven to make this decision.
Yeah.
And so I just feel just a tremendous amount of empathy and sadness when I see him just surface resting.
Yeah.
Or relegated to a back pool. It just is, it's sad. And,
yeah.
You know, I do, I came full circle.
Yeah.
You know, as sad as that event is, I definitely came full circle. I have empathy for him and think this is I just think it's our doing.
Right. Well, yeah. Well,
a way to really say it's human beings that I think drove him to this, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, because one of the things I was really struck by some of the highly favorable comments of those who had worked with him, especially early on, like a trainer from, you know, his Sealand days, Tillicum Sealand days, said something along the lines in the film about him being one they loved to work with, and he was always well-behaved and eager to please.
Right, right.
And so hard not to feel the kind of sadness you just described, because one obvious inference here is that Tillicum was a pretty cool animal, especially in the early days, before he became, I guess, psychologically damaged, or whatever the right phrase is, with all the sensory deprivation and the small pools and no lights and the withholding food, so that... Yeah, you just wonder, where's the culpability? And yeah, just the idea that this guy is now just floating kind of by himself, other than coming in for a big splash at the end of, I guess, some of the shows. It's very sad.
That's right. And I guess, you know, it's like, really all you have to know is that killer whales don't kill people in the wild, that there's no documented case
yeah.
where a killer whale has yeah. killed a human being in the wild. They don't even kill each other
right.
in the wild.
Yeah.
And to know that this is a killer whale who's killed three people, that's almost all you have to know. I mean, you can even leave the ethic behind and not even think about this as an ethical situation. To know that this is just, it's so clearly unsustainable.
Yeah.
You know, it's so clearly something about captivity. And you could point to several parks and you can point to several incidents, but, you know, really it's got to be something here in this captive, you know, in captivity and in the system of captivity that has created, you know, that's created these incidents.
For sure. Okay, well, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. I'm speaking with Gabriella Cowperthwaite, director of the new documentary Blackfish, in a conversation recorded yesterday. So kind of nearing the end of our time, Gabriella, but gosh, I certainly want to at least ask what, if anything, you would like to say about SeaWorld's response in the last few days to the film.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, SeaWorld responded to the film. I think that, you know, I'm told it's good old-fashioned damage control.
Yeah.
You know, they went after the facts, which is really not usually in a great area for them.
Yeah.
And so we've disputed every single fact. I mean, the facts are indisputable. Anybody can look online. Anybody can do their own research and realize that the facts are the facts. So, you know, I think what it has done actually is create, you know, a bunch of new people who have come out of the woodwork and called me and said, not only is Blackfish, you know, fact-driven and integral, but I used to work at SeaWorld. I was a vet there, or I was a trainer there, and I can tell you right now, Blackfish is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've got so many more stories for you, and it's 10 times worse.
Well,
so I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think to myself, did SeaWorld intend to open this can of worms? Because, you know, I kept the story of Blackfish. I really followed a very strict trajectory.
Yeah.
I really kept it as Tillicum's story.
Right.
And I didn't have to. I mean, there was tons of information I could have shoehorned in there just to make the film more sensationalistic or incendiary. And I just sort of chose not to. But you know, there are people chomping at the bit right now.
Well,
to out them in several different ways.
I'm sure. Well, and the thing is, yeah, I mean, the path that you went, again, it's what I said earlier on about coming at this not as an animal activist, much as I, of course, love animal activists, but the fact that that's not what your story was, that's not what your history was. You came as a filmmaker, you came as a parent. So, those choices that you made this, I think, all the more bulletproof. And one of the things, too, that watching the film, SeaWorld is kind of fortunate that not really much more is made of the incident and injury reports that sort of scroll by at one point on the screen, and there's like pages and pages of things that happen. And I mean, that's probably one example of something that you could have played up in the film but chose not to. But I mean, just again, as someone who's been following this fairly closely, I mean, even I was kind of staggered by just like the endless pages of incidents of trainer injuries and attacks by whales and things that, of course, the other trainers often were never made aware of.
Right, exactly. No, that's right. It's that's another kind of sad aspect to this is just, you know, there are so many trainer incidents that nobody was made aware of. And then there's so many incidents of aggression, you know, between a killer whale and you know, coming after a human being, that human beings, that the trainers didn't report because they were afraid they would be demoted or fired or called out as being, okay, well, you know, looks like you can't handle your whale. Maybe we should consider leaving you behind. And so, you know, there was just so many cases like this that you start wondering, you know, and then you realize that the trainers, the saddest part is just not having all the information, you know, for certain trainers to be working a whale that they don't know the entire profile of. I mean, just that right there is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, I thought, like, wow. I mean, I get why SeaWorld being SeaWorld wouldn't want the public to know a lot about this, but I did seem like just even by their standards, or just huge $2 billion plus company, income a year standards, incredible that they wouldn't let the other people that are in those pools with those whales know what has happened or what the history is. I mean, Jesus.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, and they can turn to their training regimen, and that's what they often do. They just sort of say, look, sure, incidents happen. Whales will aggress on trainers. But the better trainer you are, the more likely you will be able to get yourself out of that and turn your whale around behaviorally.
Wow.
And so really, it ends up being your fault.
Yeah.
If you're aggressed upon and don't get out of it.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's like almost kind of held as incentive, you know?
Yeah.
You want to get yourself, you know, out of a situation, you know, keep showing up to work and keep becoming a better and better trainer.
Wow.
And you will be that person who can whale whisper or do whatever it is that, you know, they're telling you you're capable of doing.
Yeah.
To stop a whale from killing you.
Right.
And in the case of Dawn Branchot, she never, ever had a moment. She never had a moment to be able to get herself out of that situation.
Right.
Talk Tillicum down.
Right.
And so this was, you know, this sort of refuted, I think, SeaWorld's belief system.
Right. Well,
the
again,
the trainer, the more likely a trainer won't get hurt.
Right. Well, especially, again, I think that was part of what all made this so horrible and horrific with Tillicum and Dawn Branchot is that she was the head trainer. She was incredibly experienced. As some of the people in your film say on camera, they could not believe it when they heard that it was Dawn Branchot, because it's like, she's the best, she's the smartest, she's the most experienced. So if it happened to her, and then kind of there's this ellipsis there of like, oh my God.
Right. So. Exactly. That's exactly it. Yep. If it happened to her, it could happen to all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
so, Gabrielle, we're sort of at the end of our time, but I just want to quickly hit this point. I'm sure you're no doubt familiar with this whole Empty the Tanks protest taking place this Saturday at the SeaWorlds and other facilities in the U.S.
Yes, and, I know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's humbling. It's kind of amazing. And it's, you know, on the heels of the Blackfish premiere.
Sure.
So I just kind of can't believe it. And I guess it's happening nationwide.
Yeah, and I think internationally. I think there's places in Australia, Netherlands, of course, Canada. And just to finish that thought for people listening, yeah, there's protests happening at all the SeaWorlds and comparable facilities this Saturday called Empty the Tanks. So I know you live in Southern California. Will you attend the one at SeaWorld San Diego, or will there be some other official Blackfish presence at one or more of these events? Or
we will be trying. I will be out of town.
Okay.
As you can imagine, we kind of are constantly traveling now.
Sure, of course.
To right on the heels of the movie's release.
Yeah.
But I know we'll have a presence in all of them. We've got a great network now, and so we will be you know, holding forth, and I think, you know, present in some way, shape, or form.
Cool. Well, thanks. This has been Gabriella Capworthwaite, the director of Blackfish. And again, it's opening wider and wider, I guess, as we get deeper into the summer. And there's a great website, blackfishmovie.com. And, of course, there's a huge Facebook presence for Blackfish, the movie. And, Gabriella, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And congratulations on a great, great film.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
All right. Gabriella Capworthwaite, the director of Blackfish. And again, it's opening ever wider as we move further into to the summer. So at the moment, I don't know, scheduled to appear in Tampa in the immediate future, but certainly Orlando and Miami and other spots in Florida. So anyways, really good, really well done, important film. And if you have any interest in this issue, that's a great way to get yourself educated or further educated. Because I think even people as professed experts have learned a lot from seeing this film. So in just a few minutes, we'll speak with Nancy McCall of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about their Primp Your Pit program that gets underway in just a few days' time in first bit of August. And right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. I went back into the vaults and pulled this one out. My conversation with Gabriella and Blackfish in mind. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Whale Noises on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I saw this documentary recently on whales. This guy has dedicated his life to telling you what the whales are saying. Wow. I don't know how you'd argue with him when he turns in his report. And he just throws it down there. Well, here's what the whales are saying. Okay, thanks, Charlie. just looking back. Here's what the whales are saying. Yeah, Charlie figured it out. They show how he does it. He's out on a ship. He's got a pencil, and he deciphers the whale noises as he hears them. You know, he'll hear like... You know, he's like, oh, okay. Oh. He's lonely. No, you're lonely. I'd like to do that for like 2 weeks and then turn around and find out that the door's squeaking behind you.
All right. That was Brian Regan with a piece called Whale Noises, taken from his CD simply entitled Live. All right, to fill us in on the Humane Society of Tampa Bay's participation in this Primp Your Pit program, let's welcome Nancy McCall to Talking Animals. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm really great. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on Talking Animals.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So fill us in. Let's maybe start with, I guess, the grant, the PetSmart Charities grant, and just the and really what it means.
Well, sure. This is the second year, actually, that PetSmart Charities has offered the Primp Your Pit grant, and has the Humane Society of Tampa Bay has received funding for it. Last year we did 60, and this year our goal is 75. And these are pit bulls and pit bull mixes of any age. And we made it last year, and we're really hoping to make this year. It goes the entire month of August, and the pit bulls and mixes, and it can also include puppies. Will be spayed and neutered, and they'll get their little toes trimmed, so they get a free toenail trim, and they get a cute bandana to go home, and it's a great discount for the people, and it's just a great promotion. Last year was so exciting to go back there and see all these pit bulls that were going to be spayed and neutered, because as we all know, there are so many pit bull and pit bull mixes in Tampa Bay, and actually it's a national problem.
For sure.
They end up, unfortunately, at Hillsborough County Animal Services. We take a lot of them, as many as we can. We usually have 4 to 6 at any time here up for adoption, and of course they have them for adoption there as well.
Wow. So last year, how many pits were spayed or neutered under this program?
60.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So we're aiming for 75 this year.
We are aiming for 75, and it's been out there. So a lot of appointments already have been made. I did check. There are quite a few left. There's about 30 left. And so I would definitely not hesitate to call in and make your reservation.
And so to do that, I call, if I'm not mistaken, 813-870-3304?
That's correct.
And I guess it's kind of essential, because I've announced this in recent weeks a few times, and I think it's really essential to mention the Primp Your Pit promotion when they're calling in.
Yes, when you do call, just mention that your dog is a pit bull or a pit mix.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're there for the Primp Your Pit, and they will make a reservation for you.
That's great. And sounds like, yeah, I'm glad we talked today, because I didn't realize that many folks had already, you know, pounced on this,
Yeah, that happened last year as well.
Yeah.
But we still had some open availability, and, you know, obviously we'll try to squeeze in more if we can get them in, because, you know, this is really an important matter for us. We love the breed. We love pit bulls. But there are too many of them here in Tampa Bay. So if we can, you know, take down the number, then I think we'll be doing a lot of good for the community.
And you mean in the shelters when you say that? Yeah.
Yes, in the shelters. Unfortunately, if they're not spayed or neutered, then they breed, and then there's puppies, and a lot. You know, there's only so many homes for so many pit bulls.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's sometimes the the difficult child to get adopted for reasons that, well, we've talked about many, many times on the show, but shouldn't be the case, which we've also talked about many times on the show. So, yeah, excuse me.
Not the case at all. They are fantastic, intelligent dogs.
Sure, absolutely. And again, this is a great, great opportunity for folks who have new pits. In fact, I think one of the things, too, that is important about this is that sometimes people, especially if they've ended up with a pit puppy, they think, oh, well, I have to wait kind of a lot longer. So one of the things I think that you guys also emphasize is that the American Veterinary Medical Association suggests or even endorses, I guess, spaying and neutering puppies as young as 8 to 10 weeks.
Yes, and we will go ahead and do that, and we will do that through this this program as well. So it doesn't matter as long as they're 8 weeks and over 2 pounds, which, of course, a little puppy would be. We will go ahead and get them in the spay-neuter program.
That's great. Wow. Well, this is a great deal. Again, part of our little rules here at WNF is we can't say exactly what the price is, but I can certainly say it's incredibly reasonable for spaying or neutering the pits. And again, as you mentioned, Nancy, that you also get the free nail trim, and I guess we can say, hopefully we can say that, and a colorful bandana. I mean, this is quite a extravaganza you guys have here.
Yes, well, it's really fun when you go there and everybody's checking out and you see all these pit bulls coming out and they're all in different colored bandanas and they're all dog themed and it looks really cute.
Very fashionable too, I'm sure.
Yes, so. Very fashionable. We make sure they leave in style.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's give the phone number one more time to make an appointment. It's 813-870-3304. Be sure to mention Primp Your Pit, and also we can just find out more about this or other things going on at the Humane Society Tampa. Just going humanesocietytampa.org for their website, and lots of information, and we're going to get into another, another event coming up even more immediately this weekend in our news and announcement segment. But Nancy, thank you so much for your great work to sort of land the grant that enables this to happen, and all your great work and the rest of your colleagues' work at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay.
Well, thank you so much, and we thank PetSmart Charities for their charity.
Sure. Cool.
In allowing this.
All right. Well, thanks again, Nancy.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye, Duncan.
Bye-bye. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will win a copy of David Kirby's Death at SeaWorld, highly acclaimed book. And we had Kirby on the show a while back, and of course a perfect companion piece to our discussion of blackfish today. So we'll do that in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. And just want to start off mentioning again what we touched on briefly with Gabriella there, but this Saturday, July 27th, is the International Day of Protests against SeaWorld and sort of like-minded facilities called Empty the Tanks. So I know it's happening at SeaWorld Orlando from 10 a.m. to noon, and there's all kinds of information, all kinds of Facebook pages set up devoted to various locations for this. So we can just go on Facebook, search Empty the Tanks. If that's something you would like to be involved with, you can get more information and figure out how to participate, and people are carpooling and working on other things, in some cases going to screenings of blackfish in the areas where it's currently showing, etc. So, speaking of Humane Society of Tampa Bay event also coming up this weekend, it's Pogaritaville. You heard me. It's their Pogarita adoption event this Saturday, the 27th, from noon to 4 p.m. at their shelter in North Armenia Avenue. So part of the sort of theme of this is they believe, HSTB believes, that a pet brings the carefree joy of the island life to your home every day. So on this Saturday, adoption fees for all pets will be 50% off all day. And from 12 to 4, the shelter will be transformed into a Caribbean paradise with cool drinks, hot music, and delicious food, etc. So again, Humane Society of Tampa Bay.org. I'm sorry, Humane Society Tampa.org for their website. And they're at 3607 North Armenia Avenue in Tampa, of course. I want to tell you about something else that sounds really cool, but I know they're sort of on the ropes and need some help. That's referring to here is something, a group called the Senior Pet Connection, SPC, out of Pinellas County, who supplies pet food and supplies to low-income senior citizens in desperate need to feed their pets. So The organization really, really needs volunteers in a variety of capacities, researching and applying for grants, bookkeeping, delivering the food, any and all things I think they really need help with. And it sounds like there's some urgency here in order to kind of sustain the program, the Senior Pet Connection program. So if you're interested in helping out in any capacity, you can call Gina at 727-421-7670. That's 727-421-7670. You can email also her at info@seniorpetconnection.org. And to find out more information or otherwise get involved, you can just visit their website, seniorpetconnection.org. So they need your help. Jump, help, come on. Also coming up this weekend, lots of stuff going on this weekend, including a benefit for John McEwen, great musician, sort of a fixture of the Tampa Bay music community for 40 years. We recently had emergency surgery, and John's played at Talking Animals events and was set to perform on our anniversary show last month until he fell ill. So like many musicians, does not have health insurance or at least sufficient to cover the expenses involved here. So his friends and fellow musicians are throwing him a benefit this Sunday, July 28th at Four Greens Fields Irish Pub in Tampa. That's at 205 West Platte South in Tampa. And a bunch of great bands are going to be playing. First of all, the time of this is from 3 p.m. to 7, again on Sunday, this Sunday, the 28th. Among the bands, Dirty Spoons and Trash Review, Ronnie Elliott, Gumbo Limbo, Puka, Lisa McEwen, Third Man Out, Papos, and several others. But the other cool thing that's going to be happening is a silent auction as well as a raffle. And I've seen a lot of the stuff that's going to be available for either silent to bid on for silent auction or to win if you buy raffle tickets. So some great, great, great stuff. So if you find out more about that, you can search for Rebound Johnny on Facebook, or there's actually a website simply called reboundjohnny.com. And yet another thing happening this weekend. It's the 35th birthday of Friends of Strays and the 90th birthday of their founder, Gene Belmonte. So the big party, yeah, you heard me, will be held at the Friends of Strays thrift shop this Sunday, July 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. Live music, cake, hors d'oeuvres, door prizes, lots of specials. And again, the thrift shop is at 3660 Gandy Boulevard, Pinellas Park. You can call 727-527-9699. Meanwhile, happy birthday to Friends of Strays and happy birthday to Gene. Looking a little bit ahead for the next weekend, there's an event called Benefit for Bella being held August 4th from noon to 6 p.m. at Uncle Mike's Smokehouse Grill in Tampa on 9847 Adamo Drive. So Uncle Mike's Smokehouse Grill and the Brethren of St. Francis Animal Rescue are hosting a fundraiser to help with medical costs for a hit-and-run dog named Bella. And it sounds like it was a really awful hit-and-run. And in fact, I think the folks that first came to Bella's rescue didn't think that she could have survived the hit by the car. But she did and has gone through all kinds of medical care. And so that's racked up significant bills. So anyways, this benefit to August 4th at Uncle Mike's Smokehouse will help obviously defray that. So there'll be music, silent live auction items, food and drink, and all kinds of other things. So find out more if you want by emailing info@UncleMikesGrill.com. And wanted to sort of front load the events and get into some news as time permitted, but I want to hit one more other thing, just speaking of cool things that are happening in August. Pinellas County Animal Services celebrates the month of August by offering a reduced adoption fee, which again, we can't describe specifically on the air, but it's very, very reasonable. And this, of course, is for shelter dogs and cats. So this low-cost adoption fee includes medical checkup, spaying, neutering, vaccinations, internal and external parasite control, heartworm testing, and feline leukemia testing, and microchipping. So there's also really discounted rabies vaccinations, etc. So Pinellas County Animal Services is providing that. You can go to pinellascounty.org/animalservices to find out more, or you can call 727-582-2600. 727-582-2600. All right, as far as at least hitting one or two news items, This came from BBC Nature News. While wolf howl identification technology excites experts, and it says individual wild wolves can be recognized by just their howls with 100% accuracy, a study has shown. A team from Nottingham Trent University, UK, developed a computer program to analyze the vocal signatures of eastern gray wolves. Wolves roam huge home ranges, making it difficult for conservationists to track them visually, but the technology could provide a way for experts to monitor individual wolves by sound alone. Wolves howl a lot in the wild, said PhD student Holly Ruth Guttridge, who led the research. Now we can be sure exactly which wolf is the one that's howling. And I wanted to get into this last week. A British animal activist is prepared to spend more than one month, behind kennel bars in order to raise awareness about shelter dogs. Sean LeVegan, a web designer, will live in a kennel for 35 days, starting October 5th at Manchester Dogs Home, where he's a volunteer. The shelter, which was established 100 years ago, takes in around 4,000 dogs each year. A mere 34% of the strays it finds. 35 days is the average time a pup stays at the pound. Quote, it's going to be really tough, but I didn't want to dress up in a pickle suit or run 26 miles or any of the usual things, he told the publication. I want to really show people what stray dogs go through and experience it for myself. For the first 4 days, he will go without food to mimic the response of dogs placed in a strange environment, according to the Evening Mirror there. And water will be his only beverage and a single blanket, his only comfort. So we'll track Sean LeVegan's efforts in that way. And one thing had tucked away here for a while. If you're a nervous flyer, you may need a big sloppy kiss to calm you down, and you might get one at LAX. Right, the airport I'm talking about. Therapy dogs will be spreading the love at boarding gates, baggage claim, and ticketing areas. It's part of a new program called PUPS, Pets Unstressing Passengers. Mutts, Dobermans, Bichon Frises, and other types of dogs wearing red Pet Me vests will visit all airport terminals. The program, which started recently, is modeled on a similar program at Norma Mineta San Jose International Airport, Miami International, also a therapy dog that interacts with passengers. So, good. Calming your nerves, making it easier to fly, easier to relax. All right, so that's probably going to do it for this edition of Animal News and Announcements. I'm Duncan Strasser, listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win, and there'll be a prize, a copy of David Kirby's amazing book, Death at SeaWorld, a signed copy, no less, to the first person that calls in the correct title of this animal song. 813-239-9663. And once again, I will give you a big clue. The song is hooked at WMNF's 70th birthday tribute to Mick Jagger. Two nights this weekend, Friday at the State Theater in St. Pete, Saturday at Skipper's. Some 20 bands each night will play Stone Song, and Talk to Mark will perform all of Exile on Main Street in order, in its entirety. And Mark Murphy was on with Randy this morning, describing kind of what they've gone through to prepare for that. And the band has expanded to 11 pieces, and it's just going to be awesome. So tickets are $12 in advance, $15 at the door. And the fabulous Flea is producing this extravaganza, which guarantees excellence and an awesome time for all. So WMNF.org for tickets, or Miss Julie here, 813-238-8001. So all that said, it's a Name That Animal tune on Talking Animals. Surely you can name that animal tune. We've got all the phone lines lit. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, can you name that animal tune?
That's the Beast of Burden.
It sure is. What's your name?
Shelly.
Shelly? All right, Shelley, you are our winner. We'll get you off a copy of David Kirby's great, great book, Death at SeaWorld. I'll come back and get your information as soon as we wrap up the show here. So thanks for listening. Congratulations. Okay, folks, we do have a winner, and we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, July 31st, when my guest will be Dr. Brian Hare, Associate Professor of Evolutionary Anthropology at Duke University, expert on dog cognition, and author of The Genius of Dogs, How Dogs Are Smarter Than You Think. I hope you'll join us for that next Wednesday. Also, I hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net. All kinds of information, archives, podcasts, etc. Link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. So that's all at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to you animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with a uniquely appropriate animal song for our conversation earlier in the show. The band is Killer Whales, and the song is Orca's Revenge on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.